Welcome back to the Melbourne Coffee Culture Podcast, decoding Melbourne cafe culture. Today, I'm really excited to bring you a prolific interview with the founder of Pillar of Salt, Barry's, Barwa, Square and Compass, Vacation, and opening soon in Brunswick/Coburg, Lob. I'm so excited because Kale Sahili, along with his family, have a proven track record of building incredible brands, incredible cafes, not only out in the suburbs, but also in the CBD. Vacation Coffee is an upcoming new roastery. Highly recommend it. Ditch your local roaster and go with Vacation, because incredibly delicious coffee roasted out of the Bureau Collective. And I just love the Ethiopian yogurt chef that they have in their blend at the moment. But enough about coffee. We are going to hear from Kale himself. We're actually sitting in Square and Compass in East Melbourne. So you might hear the sounds of cafe life and the fridge murmuring in the background. So apologies about that. Kale comes across as a very humble, family-focused businessman. Business person. He has young kids. He does business only with family and close friends. He's built a powerful team of creative people around him. Broadsheet has written 10, 15 articles about what he's been doing, as well as Matt Holden in The Age and The Herald Sun, Good Cafe Guide. And he really comes across as someone who is really hardworking, and there's no magic to the recipe or the formula other than loving what he does and just keeping on turning up. So here's the Melbourne Coffee Culture interview with Kale, and I hope you take notes. We have Kale Sahili here from Square and Compass, Vacation Coffee, Barwa. You might have heard of Pillar of Salt in Richmond. And I'm really excited to be here because, being a Melbourne Coffee Culture podcast, Kale and the people that are doing business with him have proven to do something that you might call a unicorn in Melbourne coffee. We talk about unicorns in Silicon Valley and how certain startups, you know, make it to the billion-dollar valuation. And I think for Melbourne, having a cafe that is, you know, going strong, and you sell and someone else takes over the business and keeps it going strong, is really, I think, a unicorn that a lot of people are unable to do. So did you want to tell us some of the venues you've run and how you've come to open Square and Compass and Vacation and what's coming next?
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me, Jono. Quite the introduction. I'm a bit flattered. Look, basically, it all just started about 8 years ago now. I was just a kid who'd been unsure of what he wanted to do, and my parents wanted me to go to uni, and had to finish my degree before I was allowed to try anything else, particularly down the hospitality road, because my father had always been in hospitality, and it was sort of something that we always knew. We always grew up at the back of my dad's restaurant in Toorak and just hanging out there, and he was pretty adamant that he wanted me to have a degree before we sort of tried our luck down this path. But it was about 8 years ago, it was probably around 2010, that I was in the midst of looking for corporate jobs as well. Like, I remember applying for a job at Telstra before we actually secured the lease at what's now Pillar of Salt, and I think most of it almost came to do with timing. The cafe scene wasn't quite what it was now, but it was certainly on the right path. They had the St. Ali's and the
Five Senses.
And the Five Senses. It just sort of like made its like, you know, way onto the scene and stuff. And I remember Porgy and Mr. Jones in Hawthorne was like doing incredible trade, and we looked at this place in Richmond on Church Street, Richmond, and it was just seemed to make sense, and we sort of gave it a shot, and we just, you know, got the felt like we were one of the earlier places to have like a Cinesso, and Five Senses was only in a handful of cafes at the time, and like I said, it was probably just a timing thing that like sort of all came together. There's a lot of hard work as well. I was 25 and my brother was 23, and we had a dad support as well, and I think it's just like it's a lot of ups and downs, a lot of fighting, particularly between family and stuff. But we get over it and we all moved on and got a pretty good relationship now. So we're still doing the same thing together, which is good. But from Pillar of Salt, we had about three and a half years there, and it was really good. And we from there we went and opened up Touchwood and Barry, which have all now since been sold. We also dipped our toe in Hawthorne for a little bit at a place called Bawa on Bird Road, and we've since sold out of that as well. Our current partners are still there. And then we met, like, I guess along the way you meet really good people and you work with really great staff, and we've met some guys that we've sort of taken on board and have been happy to get involved with us. And Matt Strubley, a really good friend of mine from high school, emceed my wedding. Him and Jeremy are partners with me at Square and Compass, and we've just clocked over 3 years here in East Melbourne, and it's sort of been a really, really fun and challenging venture at the start, particularly being East Melbourne, sort of off the beaten track. Although it's like right in the CBD, it's a thoroughfare of a suburb, and it really just got us, like, it was just a challenge of the first 3 months at Square and Compass to really get to know all the locals and get to know the hospital staff and all that sort of stuff. And yeah, it's been really good. And about 10 months ago, I opened up Vacation in the City. And found a great little corner site in the corner of Exhibition in Flinders. And yeah, we were toying with the roasting already at... we've been toying with the roasting for about a year and a half at Bureau Collective. And we were looking for a site in the city that could sort of be a flagship store for our coffee.
Well, congratulations from everyone in Melbourne, and thank you for what you've done, because it sounds like it's a family ordeal and just in the right place at the right time. But I'm telling you, as someone who's run businesses in the past and also even as a coffee supplier when I worked for Sensory Lab and St. Ali, and I spent all day, every day visiting cafes, you know, big cafes, little cafes, wineries, pubs, clubs, everywhere. And there are very, very few venues that do coffee well and do business well. And I really think that there's just incredible value in what you guys are doing and what you've done. So just for people who may not be in Melbourne, Pillar of Salt, Church Street, Richmond, yep. Beautiful venue, sort of bit of outdoor seating, really big emphasis on coffee. There was always a queue, it was always fast to get a coffee. Square and Compass was written about many, many times. I think it was the top, number one best new cafe in the Herald Sun about a year into the cafe. Vacation coffee, everyone's sort of raving about at the moment, and a bit of a different sort of gig for you guys, because it's inner city. You tend to be in the suburbs, what we call in coffee my local. People sort of adopt you as their cafe, but the vacation, you know, you're really... they can be angry. those white collar workers who want their coffee now, they want it hot, they want it fast. It's sort of a little bit different pace in my experience as a barista, not speaking on behalf of Vacation, but that corporate market, it's very different. But you've really, it's a bit of a beacon of light. It's very bright. There's batch brew, you've got the pineapple logo in there. So that is a little bit of a different appeal. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. The idea with Vacation was to, like, set up a coffee brand and a coffee company that wasn't trying to be too much, I guess. It wasn't trying to be too serious. Never called ourselves a specialty coffee company, never called ourselves any of that. We just went out there to have a bit of fun and take it a little less seriously. Like, so we're producing really good coffee, and we've got Jimmy Chong, like our roaster and our partner, who runs that side of things, and I reckon he's incredible. And Julian Bedford, our other partner who runs the shop in the city, is just like naturally gifted people person. Like, he's just without effortlessly very polite to everyone who walks through the door. And the idea was to have a bit of fun, so we didn't want like a coffee-related name. We didn't want a logo that looked like a coffee bean or a Rosetta. It was more just about, like, let's just find this little dude. It happened to be a pineapple with some eyes. And that was, like, let's just... That can be our logo, because, like, why not, I guess? And, and the space came up, and it's got some beautiful high ceilings, and we said, like, let's just take... just try and get as much light into this venue as possible. We understand most people are sort of in the office, like if you're in the city, you're in the office most of the time, or if you go into a cafe or a coffee shop, it's generally like a low ceiling basement style cafe or coffee shop, it's quite dark. So we had this opportunity to open up like these eight meter windows and stuff, and you get to look at the MCG and you get to look at the Royal Botanical Gardens. Like, it's just like a really nice spot to sit and have a coffee. And in terms of like the CBD as a space, as a place to do business, I think it's really good. I think there's heaps of opportunity there. We'd all come from those sort of my local cafes, Jules, Jimmy, my brother, and myself. And we thought like that if we could just really take like a really high quality of service and learn names and get to know everyone and get to know their coffees and look after them and bring that sort of level of service that you expect from your place 100 metres down the road from where you live, if we can bring it to a place like where you work, then, you know, there's an opportunity to build relationships. Like, it doesn't have to be... Like, it's still fast-paced, but, like, it doesn't have to be brutally fast-paced, though. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. I think it's amazing and it's great. I feel like I would like to know, and I feel like our listeners would like to know, how do you do it so many times over? And there are so many cafes that are, they close down, they're for sale, they change owners 6 or 7 times. One thing I've noticed is you're a hard worker and you're always in the business. I remember working at 3 Bags, you know, briefly back in the day before they sold, before 2 Birds and Top Paddock. And I think there were 3 owners who were pretty much always there. Mm. Is that part of the secret to success? Is it possible to own and run a cafe and not be there 5 days a week?
Yeah, I think it is possible. I think it's harder. There's a couple of really good operators in Melbourne who managed to do that. But I'm glad you mentioned those guys from the Top Paddock, because like they have a really good group of core staff, and I think a lot of them have a percentage, but they... You can always go to one of their venues and know that you'll get, if there's an issue, there's an owner on site and they can rectify an issue straight away, which I think is key. So we've surrounded ourselves with really good staff and partners, and I think it's important. Everyone can take time off while the business is being looked after by their other partner, which is important to like have time away and spend time with family and, you know, go overseas. Because you need to have a life outside of work, which is really important. Like, there needs to be balance, and it's really hard to get that balance when you're a sole owner and a sole operator. Like, it is, it's tricky, yeah. I think good partners are key.
That's great. One thing that I've observed about your cafes, and probably I was really gobsmacked learning the almost obsession with detail at places like 3 Bags, where there's one way to do things, there's a very clear production line in terms of coffee, you know, the menu doesn't change, the plates are in the same spot, and if the barista, there was no room for the barista to sort of to wing it. And that was a bit of a shock for me, even as a coffee snob. I really had to fit into their system, and there was a recipe, there was a role, there was a hierarchy, and it actually, when you embrace that level of control, it actually is quite liberating as a barista. Yeah. The customers become comfortable because their product is consistent. The wait staff, if they all do it the same way. But somehow they magically do it so it doesn't feel like McDonald's.
Yeah.
You know, because surely Hudson Coffee and all the coffee chains follow an absolute system, but somehow there's this magic where it feels creative, it feels spontaneous, it feels unique, but it's very clearly defined and it's written down and documented and everybody knows it, but the customer has no idea. Is that something that I've imagined, or is that sort of part of your philosophy as well?
Yeah, I think there'd be places there that really do like take that process to the next level. They're talking about people who are investing like a lot of money into businesses, and you can't set up. Well, I'm sure you can, but I feel like you can't set up a cafe for next to nothing. Like, I think you need to employ a designer, an architect, a builder, and you've got someone who looks after the branding. There's elements and someone looks after something every step of the way, and it's very expensive. So when the doors do open, the stress levels are high, and you've probably got a bit of a window where you get to put all these systems in place. And if they don't get put in place at the start, then they're not going to be put in place, or they're much harder to be put in place as the business matures. So I think, yeah, there'd be a lot of systems in place, and I think they're really important. And they're not they're not McDonald's systems. They're not regimented. There'd be a closing sheet and a packing up sheet and all this sort of stuff that people would have to follow. But there's probably always room for improvement as well. If we ever employ someone who's really good and they've had a lot of experience, we'll sort of say, look, we're open to changes, open to any discussion or any improvements that they may have. But yeah, it's funny. I actually had someone say to me once, have you ever thought about doing this or expanding this and making a couple of these? I'm like, oh, we wouldn't be able to franchise, for example. We wouldn't be able to franchise, for example, because we haven't got the systems. And he said to me, he's like, you've got the systems, you just don't know that they're there. You haven't, you've got your way, but you're not aware that they're actually there.
There is a great business opportunity. I don't know why I'm saying it in this podcast, but there are people who actually come into your business and put cameras in your business with your permission, and they'll have a team of people overseas who will document everything you do that you don't know that you do. And it's actually brilliant, and I highly recommend it for people who are wanting to sell a business or franchise, because once the owners are gone and you're there in the cafe and you're like, hang on a minute, how did they do that again? That was a bit of a segue. Here's probably the elephant in the room question, which is why do cafes fail? It sounds like there's been quite a few tips here, partnership, building a good team around you, finding the right location, having good systems but with some flexibility, not just winging it on a budget but actually, thoughtfully planning every step of the process. There are lots of for lease signs, and I see probably one more every week. Are there just too many cafes, or is it just bad luck?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I had a straight answer for you. I think it's I've seen really good places that have a great feel, great food, great coffee, good service, and they just don't last. It can happen. It's one of those. It's just the nature of hospitality sometimes. I think it's definitely harder to do business nowadays than it was even 5 or 6 years ago. Every 6 months or so you'll get a letter from supplier, increase in cost, increase in petrol prices, this, that and the other, the rent goes up and all this sort of stuff. Everything sort of continually moves one way, but it's hard for your prices to chase the increase in expenses. So while we're paying, I'm just going to say some figures that are all made up, but say we're paying $10,000 more in rent than we were last year, we're still charging the same price for coffee, or we're still there's still all these sorts of variables that we can't control.
Yeah, that's right. I remember when Five Senses was booming in the early 2000s, and St. Ali still had a 1 kilo roaster. We didn't have to pay baristas $20 an hour. There was no pressure to use unhomogenized biodynamic milk at close to $5 for 2 litres. There was no almond milk, there was no coconut milk, and people were just pretty happy to get a coffee fast. So I think that definitely the costs have gone up for cafes. I think there's a bit of a trend towards cafes roasting their own. I think places like Bureau Collective are great. I bought my copy of Colin Harmon's book.
Yeah.
I'm actually a Harmon from Ireland on my mother's side, so I don't know if we're related. but I've got actually a few of my listeners have emailed me some questions, which is exciting. So I'm going to ask a couple of these because I don't want it to be a really long interview. There's so many questions. Okay, so from Adam in Melbourne, he's a Google AdWords expert, but also a coffee freak, and he asks, how do you create a distinct or unique identity for each cafe? So obviously you've come up with those names, Pillar of Salt, and is it flicking the dictionary to a random page, or...?
It usually comes back to the area, and believe it or not, the hardest part to come up with is generally the name between four or five people. It's something no one ever agrees on, but at the end of the day, we've actually come to the stage where we put a few names in a hat, and whoever picks out the name, that's it. That's the name of the cafe. I think if you generally look to the area. Square and Compass is an ode to the Freemasons. We're surrounded by the Freemasons building, and East Melbourne is a pretty dominant suburb for that. Bawa was derived from the Burundara Council, where Hawthorne's located, and Burundara was an Aboriginal term for a shady space, hence the foliage and the greenery inside the building.
It's beautiful.
And that ended up going down this... Jeffrey Bawa path, which was he's a Sri Lankan architect, and then I don't know, that they just come, and then I think you usually need to work with the space you have. Every building is different, and then I think they just sort of evolve a little bit. They're all getting I think the cafes in Melbourne generally have evolved. They're not all. No, you don't really see many people sitting on milk crates anymore, whereas you could have just thrown milk crates out 10 years ago and people would have been wrapped with that. So I think you just need to have a look at the space around you and the shops around you and the people in the area and try and appeal to them.
That's amazing. So from David, is there a Melbourne palate in working out the menu where... Probably known, I didn't know this until I talked to people from overseas, but Melbourne cafes are all about brunch, apparently.
Yeah, it's a fair call. We look at I like to think the food has evolved a little bit as well, but we try not to put any smashed avocado on any dishes anymore. I'm not sure whether I'm sick of it or there is a definite moving. So we now have all day menus at most of our places. And so if someone wants to come in and get a burger, first thing in the morning, by all means, or if they want to have poached eggs in the afternoon at 4 o'clock, that's fine. But I think, there's been a bit of a shift in menu that can be, food that can be accessible all day. And it might be having a handful of salads and lighter dishes in which a protein can be added to it. It can be simply just changed to a vegan dish or a gluten-free dish or a vegetarian dish, just with eliminating one element from a dish, which just sort of expands your menu without really it just appeals to a broader audience that way. I think Barry did it really well in Northcote when we opened there. My sister had a really good touch on the menu, and we just sort of had a really broad range of dishes that would appeal to everyone.
That's amazing. Sounds great. That's a really good idea. And I certainly love the food that we were talking before the interview. I don't eat bread. I don't eat sugar. I don't eat milk. So for me to go to most cafes, I have to order, avocado, salmon, two eggs, and cost me $75. Whereas here and a lot of your places, I can order, there are two or three or four things I can order with little or no changes. So thank you. Is there anything hard about success? I guess That's actually from my brother David, who you know. Is there anything like you've done? You know, you've done well a few times, or is it just the paperwork? Could be anything.
That's a silly question, David. it's always got its challenges. I mean, it's just like sort of. I mean, I think as you get a little bit older, you sort of realize it's important to like still have fun, and if it's not enjoyable, then it's not worth it. And I think that's like one key thing that's worth noting, that you have your up days and your down days, and it's like any job at the end of the day. Like you know we all enjoy elements of our work, and sometimes like there's elements that are really difficult, and sort of always on show when you're on the floor, so you need to sort of be careful how you handle certain situations. But yeah, there's definitely just elements of stress and stuff that like will be there. They were there since day one, and they'll probably be there in 10 years' time.
Great. And is there a dream that you have? Like, is your dream to open another 2 or 3 cafes and retire, or is it to take what you've done here to another country? And or obviously you've said the franchise thing sort of isn't your model. What's your dream? What would you love to see happen? Whether it's doesn't have to be a real plan, but what would you love to see happen?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. I think like I've got 2 young kids now, and there's still a short window for us to maybe move down the coast or move offshore for a little bit, but I don't think it's going to happen. Having said that, like I think Vacation is like a really great brand. I think it'll be a really strong brand in the coming years, and I think we're going to just really focus on that. And my little brother's, you know, 3 years younger than me. He can go overseas if he wants, and he can go give something a shot in like in Japan or something. So we've got our feet pretty well soiled into like, you know, we've got our roots down in Melbourne.
Being rooted and grounded in Melbourne with a great legacy of cafes behind you, do you think that whether it's yourselves or someone else doing it, can you take what Melbourne Coffee has done, Melbourne Cafe Culture has done overseas? Do you think it's something that we could export? I mean, there are already articles in, you know, in the New York Times and a whole bunch of other places, and top 10 Melbourne cafes in Berlin, top 10 Melbourne cafes in New York. Is it a bit embarrassing with pulling our own chain, or is there something that we can bring to the rest of the world?
I'm not sure. I went to Berlin about 8 years ago, and it was like, probably about 6 years ago. And I thought there's some really good coffee shops, and I think there's a lot of people already doing that, like taking the Melbourne scene. Like, I think Proud Mary's in Portland. I think they're doing really well, and so they should. Like, he's picked up and taken a massive leap and moved his family over there, and he deserves to do well. They've got a good, really good product. So, I'm not sure. Like, I think Melbourne's probably one of the most saturated markets for cafes in the world, if not easily the most saturated market for cafes. So it does make sense as an operator to maybe like try somewhere else. Yeah, somewhere else would be easier.
That's great. Is there anything you want to promote or plug, or it could be your own business or an Instagram account or a pet hate in hospitality you want to whinge about now that you can?
No, if I was going to give anything a plug, it would be we're opening up in Sydney Road, Brunswick in a few months, which is going to be cool. It's like a 130-seater place. It's, we're looking forward to like getting there. We've got like a beautiful space like designed by Techne, and it's a nice big old like shed style building right on Sydney Road, almost in Coburg, so quite far north, like towards A1 Bakery, and that's going to be called Lobs after William Lobs. It is the that hill. It's on a small hill. It's called Lob Hill. But we're going to try and like target events and use the space as a function space, and we'll put our like we've got a fair bit of room to play with, so we want to sort of, I don't know, maybe just push it. But we're sort of here, like we want to open places now, and we want to hold on to them. I think we're done turning over cafes, I guess. We want to like sort of build places that you're proud of and you can hang on to for a while. And yeah, so that would be it. I've got no qualms with the industry. I've got nothing to bitch and moan about. it's just, it is what it is. It's, you know, every industry has their tricky spots and their, you know, and the good with the bad sort of thing.
That's great. Thank you so much for your time, Cale. I believe that there are a lot of people who know about what you've done and look forward to what you're moving into in the future.
Yeah. I've just remembered something I'm not a fan of. It's swans on coffee.
That's great, because I can only do chickens. I don't know why. I've been like next to the best swan baristas. Yeah, thank you for that. That's awesome.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.